shot in the dark. Wary sort of spark. I'm a light that's too bright for me to see.
Welcome back to The Counterposition. I am your humble host, Andrew Whaley, here on Breadbox Media. All right, here we go, kids. Episode 301. Okay, first of all, I cannot believe that I am saying the word three. 300 and what? What is that about? Also, there is an asterisk underneath 301 that says, actually, this is 301B. And 301 happened in Atchison, Kansas, in the Super 8 on Friday. And, hey, fun fact, when you have a full SD card and you put it in your laptop and you drag all the files that you don't need anymore because they're all in the Google Drive and over in some kind of a locked digital vault in Lexington, Kentucky, and so you drag them all to the trash can to clear up some room to do episode 301. See, it turns out you have to empty your trash. You have to empty your trash while you're got the card in the laptop. Yeah. Or it doesn't let go of the memory. Now, why does that matter? Because then you end up doing an entire show and then looking down and seeing the words card full and realizing that you have not been recording this entire time. So there you go. So anyway, Calix on the Road episode, Counterposition, coming to you from Topeka, Kansas today. Episode 301, I am in a little park. Let's just take a second. Hold on. Let's listen. You hear that? That's the sound of spring. That's the sound of birds, if you can hear it. I'm just in this park and there's so many birds. It's amazing. It's just like all these trees. There's also some kids screaming in a yard somewhere, which is kind of fun. It's better than the full-on sirens that were going on a few minutes ago. And, you know, and I parked in this little park here and thinking, hey, it's a nice little park. It's really close to the university and the nice coffee house I was in is a few blocks away. And as I'm sitting here, I'm realizing that this is not the best neighborhood. I am not in the greatest neighborhood. And so you may hopefully, if after they mug me, they let me keep the SD card, then you will get to hear me being mugged. And then you won't get a show for a while because I probably can't afford to replace this Zoom recorder. Anyway, so yeah, I've been on the road, went to Atchison, Kansas for the symposium on the advancing of the new evangelization, the sixth annual symposium on the advancing of the new evangelization at Benedictine College, and that was a good time. That was a good time. But before I get on to that, I have some housekeeping / recapping to do. And so I just want to recap episode 299 and 300 in case you skipped over and didn't listen. 299 was a blast. It was raucous and funny and weird and a little crazy. But it was an interview with Chris Stefanik and a bunch of his kids and nephews and nieces. And during this process, in the third segment, Chris Stefanik let his 14-year-old daughter use a hot wax kit, to basically rip hair out of his back. He got a chunk of his back waxed by his daughter. It was like one of the funniest things I've ever witnessed in my life, and one of the most cringeworthy things, and one of the single strangest things ever done on Catholic radio. So yes, if you would like to hear world Catholic famous speaker Chris Stefanik get hair ripped out of his back by his 14-year-old daughter and us all mocking him while it happens, episode 299. Also, a lot of good conversation with some really cool kids about what they're doing for Lent and kind of a teenage take on what they're on spirituality. It's fun. Episode 300, big 300th episode. And I told you might be a little underwhelmed if you didn't understand. So this was just an interview, like I've done before, with Michael Miley. The difference was Michael Miley was in Camarillo, California, and I was in Denver, Colorado, because I now have Ringer.com, which is this cool new Ringer is this cool new tool that a lot of podcasters and broadcasters are using, and I can do interviews that are crystal clear and sound really good at a distance now, which opens up a ton of possibilities for me because I am a tech idiot, as my simple SD card mistake Friday shows, and I could never figure out how to get Skype, you know, how to hack Skype and put it together, and we were going to get FiendPhone for a while, but then it only worked on a PC, and it was like, gosh, I just didn't like the way it sounded or whatever, and then I was like, why doesn't someone create a tool where you can record yourself on your end, they record themselves on their computer on the other end, and then it stitches it together on the internet. So that's what Ringer did. And so I told you it was going to be underwhelming, but it was, in the long run, I think that's a turning point for because I'm already starting to schedule interviews with some pretty big guns and pretty interesting people, authors and stuff. And I can now interview anybody anywhere, as long as I got some Wi-Fi in the process, and as long as they have an okay head mic of some kind and know how to put it into a computer. So there you go. Episode 300 was a turning of the corner. Speaking of housekeeping and things that need to happen, I have a shout out to Sharon Wick in Frisco, Texas. Now, it might be a while before Sharon hears this because she started from the beginning. She's in the mid-240s, I think, right now, listening to a couple a day. But she's, I mean, that was, or maybe 250. She should catch up soon. If you did just catch up, welcome, Sharon. We're glad to have you on the current episode. Sharon wrote me an email that choked me up. I know there's a bunch of you out there listening that I don't know, that I don't get feedback from, that no one, I have no idea if you're there or not. And quite honestly, this is a startup, and we're doing this out of love for a while. And there's times when I'm busy, like hypothetically, I don't know, I'm between appointments in Topeka, Kansas. And so I go to a slightly sketchy park and sit under a roof at a picnic table and talking to a microphone for an hour, right? If I didn't love this, I wouldn't do this today, right? But I've committed to doing, you know, as best I can to try to get some shows out each week. And but I tell you what, Sharon sent me an email telling me the story of how she found the show, how she'd interacted with it, what it meant for her life, and what she felt about me and about the way I view things, and what, and it's, I'm telling you, choke me up. I mean, it was so incredibly meaningful. And so I just want to do a shout out to Sharon and thank her so much for listening. Thank all of you for listening. And just say, if you're out there and this show means something to you, man, I would love to hear from you. I've always said, you know, hey, let me know what you like, what you don't like. And that's always been, I've always appealed for feedback for the sake of sculpting the show into something to make it better for you to listen to. I'm making a different appeal today. I really, it helps me as a human being with four projects going simultaneously to have the energy and, you know, to fight through not feeling like I have anything to say or something. It really helps when I know someone listens. And the two or three times that I've gotten I get feedback about friends of mine text me and go, oh, such and such was a great show. And sometimes that's a show that I think wasn't very good. And they're like, oh, that was amazing. I mean, and it's like, well, thanks, man. I appreciate that. And that's a good encouragement. But I tell you what, there's been a few emails that my initial correspondence with Allie Cavanaugh, shout out to Allie, and a few others, ending with Sharon in Texas there, that when I hear what this means to you and that this is part of your life and it's affected you and affected your life in a way, that literally makes the struggle that this is sometimes so, so worth it. Now, for the record, most of the time I love doing my show. It cheers me up. I would do my show even if there was no mic on. Some of the ideas I throw out on this show are things that I was kind of thinking out loud in my car. I think out loud all the time. And so, so I love doing the show. Don't get me wrong. It's not like it's a drudgery or something. But there are days that if I didn't have to, if I hadn't committed to, I'm busy as all get out. And I would not stop what I'm doing, hook up recording gear, and talk into a microphone for an hour. But it's people like Allie and people like Sharon and people that give me the feedback. You know, John Coons, Jeff Neal, Michael Miley, Zach Candler, you know, Adam Merring. Some of you guys, when you shoot me texts and let me know that something was good or it meant something to you, it makes all the difference. So if you're out there listening and we've never connected, thecounterposition@gmail.com, thecounterposition@gmail.com, send me an email and tell me how you found the show, what you like about the show, what you don't like about the show, what it's meant to you, the role that it fills in your life, how you interact with it. Give me some feedback, man. Let me know you're out there. I mean, it's like, shoot me an email is the equivalent of giving a preacher an amen. Just let him know. Let him know that you're listening. You don't have to agree. Just let him know you're listening. So, anyway, big fat Shiner, Texas shout out. Sharon Wick in Frisco, Texas. She's near Shiner. Frisco, Texas. Sharon Wick. Big fat shout out. Thank you for the feedback. All right. So I'm on the road. I'm going to be heading over to Lawrence, Kansas later today, and then heading into Kansas City, hopefully having dinner with my almost daughter, Clara. I'll tell you what that is later. You're listening to The Counter Position.
Let my sacred word to mutter. Ran too fast and turned to butter. I'm a bit too much for me to chew.
If you enjoy listening to Andrew Whaley on The Counter Position, you should become a friend of the show. Go to breadboxmedia.com and click on Friend of the Show to provide your support. Thank you.
Let me skip across the pond. I'm an ocean on and on. I'm a fish with no bowl that I outgrew. Lift my blood. The only one on track.
Welcome back to The Counter Position. I am your humble host, Andrew Whaley, here on Redbox Media. All right, I did humble two times in a row. I forgot. Let's see. Welcome back to The Counter Position. I am your sitting in the middle of a sketchy park about to possibly get mugged in the rain host, Andrew Whaley, and you are listening to The Counter Position. So I'm going over to Lawrence, Kansas. When I went to the break, I ran out of time. I'm going over to Lawrence, Kansas to, I want to try to find out some stuff and check out the, I don't know what it's called even. It's at the Newman Center over there at the Catholic Center. But, so John Sr. back in the day had this thing called the Integrated Humanities Project. And it was based out of KU over there. And they have restarted something kind of the same thing over there after all these years. And this is the project that Bishop Conley came out of. The fathers of my good friends, Kathleen Mason and Bridget McCarthy, they're both down in Gallup, New Mexico. Jay Mason and Bill McCarthy came out of it. There's hundreds of people. I mean, and this guy took kids who are running around in the 60s and 70s and just trying to figure it out, brought them in, taught them how to look at the stars and read Homer and go to Mass. And next thing you know, so a lot of them ended up monks and stuff. And anyway, they've restarted this program at a public university, and it looks kind of similar to what I would like to do with Calix in the long run in our academic college town model. So I want to go over there and poke around. And then after that, I'm going to go into Kansas City, hopefully have dinner with the good Dr. Megan Corn. And I may be having dinner as well with my almost daughter. Now, what's an almost daughter, right? Well, there's this girl, Clara, who I love to pieces. And when Clara was a little 4 or 5 year old girl, I was engaged to her mom. And that didn't work out. And later on, through the power of digital media, I reconnected with Clara, and we have kind of been friends on Facebook and message back and forth every now and again. And, you know, her and her mom came down and saw my shop in Missouri when I had the shop in Cape. And I haven't seen her in a while, and she lives in Kansas City, so I'm going to hopefully go to dinner with tonight. And it's interesting, you know. The daddy thing kicked in on me early when I was in that relationship, kind of helping take care of her. And it's like, it's never really turned off, you know. It's I'm really amazed that I've stayed single this long and not had my own family. But I adore her, and I can't wait to see her. So hopefully we'll be able to put that together. And speaking of family, man, I went to dinner last night over at the Corrin, Casa Corrin, in South Kansas City. And my friend Megan's family, and they served me a beautiful steak made out of beef that they grew and harvested on their own land, grass-fed. And it was just like, I tell you what, as a single guy who's an only child, sitting in a room packed with family, like a big family with tons of kids running around chasing a dog and all these sisters and brothers and everybody and the extended family all hanging out. I mean, it's like being in Narnia, okay? It's like being in the Shire or something. It's like so beautiful and good and foreign to me. It's like if you put that much of my family in the same room, I mean, fights would break out that would result in people not talking to each other for 10 years or something. We're just not those people. And it just, when people are gracious enough to bring you in and let you experience the goodness of their reality when they did it right, it's just a deeply beautiful and consoling thing. Yeah, so that's what's going on this weekend, or this early part of the week. Over the weekend, I was in Atchison, like I said. So, and I want to talk about that on a later segment. I want to get into Atchison, small towns, and talk about the symposium I went to itself. But I want to talk about something that that occurred to me, and then occurred to me again, and occurred to me almost repeatedly for roughly 10 hours. And that is that there is a giant delta between what I think I want and what I think I really enjoy and what I do enjoy, or at least all the time. And nothing gets more obvious to me about that. Nothing seems more obvious to me about the delta between what I think I enjoy and what I actually want than a long, long, long drive. Now, I sometimes drive down to Gallup, New Mexico, and see Father Josh Mayer, and I have family out here in Kansas, and I've been out here a couple times. And every once in a while, I get a wild hair, and I'll have a long academic break or take some time off, and I'll rent a car and drive all the way to California from Colorado. And every time I do this, I picture this thing in my head where it's going to be great. I'm going to be out in the desert, or I'm going to be driving across the plains in just unbroken hours of silence, and I can decompress and really think some big thoughts and really just kind of let my mind and soul stretch out a little bit, which just the zen of driving, and that, you know, your right brain kicks in when you're in kind of moderate traffic moving at a good pace because of the shifting patterns. It causes right brain activity. And, you know, I just love the idea of doing that. That just sounds like something that I would want to, like, I mean, I've often thought, man, I should just drive a truck for a living because I love just long drives. And then I get in a car and I get out of town. I'm like, well, this is rough because I'm still in town. And gosh, man, traffic out to the airport's bad. And then I get out of the airport and I'm out between the airport and Lyman. And I'm all right, starting to clear out. Good, good. And I'm like, you know, I need to get some coffee. That's the problem. I just need some coffee. I mean, I need to get woke up here. I'm tired. I stop and I get some coffee, and there's no good coffee. And then I, you run around, you do this stuff. And then finally you're like, you know, man, I really, I wish I could stop. It's like I'm tired. My back's kind of hurting. My legs are stiff. I'm not super stoked on being in this car right now. All right, I just need to distract myself. I need to do something. I need to get something going. So started listening to the Benedict Option on audio. And I was like, yeah, that's what I need to do, is I just need to listen to an audio book. And it's like, I'm just like, it's good. It gets good for on like a 9-hour drive. It's good for about two. And then the rest of the time, you're like, am I there yet? Is there anything worth eating on one of these exits? I mean, I really have to go to the bathroom. I mean, should I just stop? But should I take this exit? And you're like looking at your phone, trying to figure out where the next rest area is. It's like, it's funny. And this is kind of typical of my life. I idealize. And I tell you what else I do. There's another one I do every time. I'm doing it right now. I admit it. I'm doing it in my life right now. Like, I want to open a coffee house. And I've literally written in my book, in my journal before, if you ever start thinking about opening a retail shop, read this, because this is what your week's been like, and this is normal, okay? And I write, like, oh, yeah, that's right. It's like a 100-hour week, and you work your tail off, and, you know, there's, like, you're struggling like crazy to do something good, and no one's coming in, and it's like, all right. And then when it's busy, it's like such hard work. And it's like, okay, yeah, I don't. Man, look at that building that's open next to the wine store. Oh, it's got brick walls. It's got this. It's like, I sit and I think about, oh, it'd be great if it's, you know, if it's slow, then if it's slow, I'm going to just hang out and read books or something. And if it, and then people will come in, I got long conversations with them and something, but we'll get busy. And then I can kind of like, you know, help give people jobs to make, do something really good and beautiful with artisan work. And it's, I just idealize the idea of the retail life. And then I get a shop and I go, oh God, I'm stuck in this shop. I can't leave. I'm here all the time. And it's like, it's just, I'm telling you, I think it's why I live in my head. It's like everything is so much better in my head. The difference is it doesn't exist in your head. It's just a damn concept in your head. And so I think a lot of what growing up and maturing is about learning how to discern between what you really, really want and what you like the idea of. It's like some things are better left as ideas. Some things, if they're not incarnated, and they'll just be fruitless and they'll kill you. But some things are better left as ideas. And or you need to ask yourself, like with coffee houses, for example. I ask myself, do you really want to run a retail coffee house? No. Do you want to own one? Maybe. Do you want to definitely have like control over one in the strategic kind of like what happens in it and how it develops over time? Yeah. Yeah. Do you want to be the guy that has to remember that we need chips? Absolutely not. I do not want to order the chips. I don't want to be the guy that has to go to the store and get the milk. I don't. So it's like, maybe I'll try train. Maybe that's what I need. Instead of long car drives, maybe if I could just hunker down, read books, not have to pay attention to driving, maybe then I could really get lost looking out the window. But you know, I've only been on one long train trip, and there was something wrong with the engine in it. We could never really get up to speed. And the dirty little secret about trains is when they have to stay too slow like that, they're really jerky. And I just got seasick and thought I was going to puke on this train on the Pacific Coastliner or Pacific Surfliner going from San Jose down to Santa Barbara. So, all right, well, let's go to the break. And when we get back, we're going to talk about something other than the idealization in my head and the frustration with reality. You are listening to The Counter Position.
Then how we crave a hanging in the dark.
You are listening to Breadbox Media Podcast. Check out our live stream at breadboxmedia.com. Breadbox Media. Get the app, change the world.
People singing. please don't stay, but please don't go.
Welcome back to The Counter Position. I am your trying to compete with the sound of birds host. I wonder if you could hear these birds in the back. I have no idea. I forgot my headphones, so I can't really hear what you're going to be hearing. I'm using math and looking at the numbers and stuff to see if I'm recording correctly. And so, so birds, yeah. Anyway, sorry, I was getting something in my ear from my Bluetooth. So I drove across Kansas. Here I am. And, you know, I tell you what, the first time I drove across Kansas going to Colorado in 1997 to go to Thomas Aquinas College, I really thought it was beautiful. And there is kind of a stark beauty to those rolling plains. You know, there's something to be said about that. But I tell you what, man, you're just like the better part of a day. You're just begging God for a tree, something, anything besides flat plains. Yeah, I'm fairly sure I'm gonna get mugged at some point during this this episode. Yeah, this is not the best neighborhood at all. How can this neighborhood be that close to that hipster of a coffee house and a university? Anyway, I just like you to know that it's been great doing the show. I really care about you all. So I'm just going to give them the equipment if they try to take it. anyway, so it's, yeah, so we're in I crack myself up. Oh, in a dark existential kind of way. So we're in Kansas. I am in Kansas. We, the royal we, the editorial we, are in Kansas. I was in Atchison, Kansas for this symposium. And Atchison is kind of one of the many kind of, I'm not going to say dead, but has taken a solid shot kind of small towns. I mean, there's some kind of big factory there. I've been meaning to, like, Google it or ask somebody, find out what kind of factory that is. But, there's some kind of a factory or two there, but it seems like there wasn't a lot of job. Benedictine College seems to be the town. I mean, that really is the what's in Atchison, Kansas is Benedictine College. And it's just, I grew up in a really tiny town and smaller than that town. And it's just, I forget the context of what being in small towns is like. And I've been in a small town quite a bit off and on during this trip. I came, saw my family that live in Kansas, outside of Topeka, Kansas. And, one thing that I've noticed about small towns is kind of ironic, because you think of small towns as being the home of mom and pop businesses, you know, these little small businesses that, you know, in the independent, the not global, the local, the, you know, your customers, and this is owned down the street, you know. But in reality, a bunch of life in a small town revolves around giant global brands like Walmart and McDonald's and Sonic and these gas station chains and all this. I mean, I was in Atchison, and there's always little small restaurants and stuff and everything. And you would try, I was trying to go to McDonald's, get a cup of coffee, because I hadn't found coffee in the town yet that was worth drinking. And I just needed caffeine, and I didn't want to go all the way back to the hotel. And there's like, I've never seen lines in the drive-thrus and stuff like at this McDonald's. It's like everyone in town is just like the default place to go is McDonald's. It was just strange. And I mean, I remember that. Like when I had my shop in Cape Girardeau, Missouri, I used to get so frustrated. And in Fillmore before that in California, two shops in a row, man. I was so frustrated. I tried to put coffee houses in these small towns. There's another thing, like long drives, like owning a coffee house. I love the idea of a small town. I love the idea of local business being supported. And one thing I notice is that everyone says they support local business. And they like the idea of local business. They support it conceptually. Like, yeah, I'm glad those places exist. So you shop in small businesses? Oh, yeah, yeah. And then you look at their credit card statement, and it's like Walmart, Walmart, you know, Vaughn, Safeway, Walmart. I mean, they shop in these huge stores. They shop in these global brands, these box stores, and every once in a while swing by, if they happen to be parked nearby or something, they go to an independent shop of some kind. And that is really just the reality. It's sometimes really, really hard for these small businesses to thrive in an environment where they have to compete with these global brands. And you would think that, oh, well, yeah, like in the city or in the suburbs, you know, that's where that thing's going to happen. But really, when you go to a very small town, these very few, and it's a few brands, McDonald's, Walmart, Burger King, these places, you know, these places dominate the life of these small towns. I mean, people are free to shop wherever they want to, but I was just kind of shocked. But so, two comments on my experience of small towns since I've been here. One is a shout out to Daisy Chain Atlantic and Daisy at the owner Daisy at Daisy Chain Atlantic, because on my last day there, I found finally a good little independent coffee house and place to grab some food and stuff in Atchison, Kansas. So if you're listening from Atchison, Kansas, go to Daisy Chain Atlantic. It's inside of or kind of attached to Backyard Atlas, but they said they're going to move. Now, I made a rookie mistake, and I have to apologize because I would have given a lot of business over the few days to Daisy Chain Atlantic. I would have took people there. I would have bought coffee every day a couple times there. It was pretty close to the college. And I looked on Google Maps, and all I saw were these other places. I checked them out, and it just wasn't where I wanted to go. It wasn't worth the difference wasn't worth the price and the experience and the hassle. Daisy Chain Atlantic was. Why didn't I see them? They're not on Google. They're having trouble getting their Google Place attached and everything. And I should know that because I have been fighting this battle with Google for 4 years in Denver, Colorado. I am not on Google Places. Well, I think we finally are, but I don't own the Google Place. I can't respond to reviews. I can't do anything. I don't even look at it. But I think we're technically there, though, now that I think about it. They weren't on Google at all. And I didn't search Yelp. I should have searched Yelp. I should be obvious to me of all people who has a ton of reviews on Yelp, but not really much going on Google, that I should have checked both. And I didn't, and I drank bad coffee. Well, I had good coffee. I had coffee in my room. I brought all my gear, and I brought some beautiful Ethiopia from a Commonwealth coffee. And I made coffee in the room every morning and everything, or at least most mornings. But I really always try to find the local shop and go, and I didn't. And I find on the last morning, as I was on my way out of town down to head towards Emporia to see Father Nick Blaha, and super cool project kind of firing up in Emporia, Kansas, by the way, you'll hear a lot about that. Someone said, hey, you should go to Daisy Chain Atlantic. And I'm like, or you should go to Backyard Atlas. And they didn't realize there's a separate business inside there. And I was like, God, I wish I'd have found this. Ah, it's killing me. Anyway, shout out to them. And the other thing that I want to just kind of talk about is I think the farther south you go, the farther more into the Midwest and the farther rural you go, especially, the more likely that you're going to find a very serious selection of fried foods available pre-fried and sitting there in a warmer in a gas station. And call it my taste and bad taste, but I love bad fried gas station food. Just like, I love popcorn chicken, those little like potato wedges and stuff. I mean, it's like, it's good. And so I embrace it in kind of an Anthony Bourdainian, you know, embracing of the local cuisine and kind of like the adoption, you know, the participation in kind of peasant food that Bourdain does. The truth be told is this morning I went to get some coffee at this little gas station on the way into Topeka because I needed to start caffeining up. And the dogs at my family's house were like barking and kept me up most of the night. And I had a little bit of an allergy reaction to petting the dogs. So I need some caffeine. So I go to this little gas station to get a cup of bag coffee or an energy drink or something. And they've got all this fried food out there. And I look and they have fried chicken livers. Now, my mom was forced to eat liver when she was growing up. And so she hated it and hated to make it, never made it for me. My aunt and uncle, my great aunt and great uncle, they were like my grandma and grandpa, kept me. They love liver. They love chicken liver. They love liver and onions. They never asked me to eat it, never made me eat it. They just ate it in front of me and went on and on about how good it was. So I ate it and I liked it. So my mom, every once in a while, would make me liver and onions or chicken livers or something, even though she wouldn't eat them. So I love chicken livers. I love fried chicken livers. It's one of my favorite things, especially with cocktail sauce. I love fried chicken livers. I remember Gandy's in Bontang, Missouri, when I was a kid, had like the best chicken livers. So this morning, I had bad truck stop coffee and fried chicken livers for breakfast. It was spectacular. In a very Anthony Bourdain at a roadside meat stand in southern Gaza kind of way, you know? It makes me feel better when I eat bad road food. It makes me feel better if I pretend to be Anthony Bourdain. I feel better about most things when I pretend to be Anthony Bourdain. All right, this is your host, not Anthony Bourdain. You're listening to The Counterposition. We'll be right back.
Then all this color glass, that painter's palette smash, all the colors of my soul.
If you enjoy listening to Andrew Whaley on The Counterposition, you should become a friend of the show. Go to breadboxmedia.com and click on Friend of the Show to provide your support. Thank you.
I'm a hyena laughing fool. I'm a hero without anyone to see. Love decked myself in toys. I'm a poor and kingly boy. Oh, I'm lovely. Oh, I'm lovely. And I'm dumb.
Welcome back to The Counterposition. I am your not mugged in this sketchy park so far host, Andrew Whaley. And, all right, so this is Calix / Counterposition on the Road episode. I am in a not altogether safe park in Topeka, Kansas. I haven't been threatened or anything. There's just people looking at me, you know, like when people look at you like you're crazy for doing what you're doing. I remember when I first moved to Denver, I was living with Kevin O'Brien and we lived over in Aurora. Now we lived in what I like to call a Rowry because it was Aurora, but right on the edge of Lowry. And we were like this buffer neighborhood. If you went two blocks one way, you'd be in Lowry, and there were houses, apartments, and cars that I could not afford. You go two blocks the other direction, and I would literally people would try to sell me drugs or proposition me as a prostitute while I was trying to buy tacos. It's like, and it was all within walking distance. It's right there, man. So we were between the good and the hood, I always say. And I remember going to the 7-Eleven on Yosemite and 11th. In Aurora, right on the edge of Lowry, but it's just kind of the edge of the bad neighborhood. And it was super freaking cold, and I just moved to Denver, and I didn't know any better. I didn't even know about the law. There's a law about not doing this. And I parked right in front of the front door, ran into 7-Eleven to get like a Gatorade or something, and I left my car running. And these like five or six young black dudes come in. And one of them comes up to me. He's like, "Man, is that your car?" And I'm like, yeah. "Dude, where do you think you are?" He's like, he had the ghetto intervention. He had the ghetto vention. He was like, He's like telling me and my boys, we're just going to take that. You know what I'm saying? We're going to take that crap. Yeah, bad, worse language than that. I'm going to ride it around. He's like, I'm trying to laugh it off. I'm like, man, that thing's worth more for the insurance than it is. You know, you'd be doing me a favor. You know, he's like, you want me to take that? I ain't playing. You want me to take that? I'm on Tukey, take his car. I was like, why? He's like, you can't leave that. I mean, like, I'm not kidding you. He had the ghetto intervention. He's like, hey, rural white boy, you can't leave your car running here. He was looking at me like I was nuts. It was for my own good. This man had my best interest in mind. He was trying to explain to me that I was doing something crazy. So that look you get when someone's looking at you like, are you really sitting on a bench in this neighborhood with possibly expensive equipment out, talking into it with an iPhone out? Really? You're going to do that? You're crazy. I'm getting that look occasionally by people walking through this park. That's why I says kind of I might get mugged. Not like anybody's threatened me, you know, but the right guy just has to walk by. I just got to finish this segment and get out of here before the right guy or the wrong guy walks by. But oh, the counter position. All right, so I was in Benedictine, Kansas, or I was in Atchison, Kansas, at Benedictine College for the 6th annual symposium on the advancement of the new evangelization, and it was spectacular. Now I want to do a more detailed show. I want to go back through my notes though, and kind of think about a few points, and I want to hit some actual intellectual points and things I heard. But I just want to give you kind of the one segment, kind of like here's a symposium recap real fast. First of all, mad shout outs to everybody from the Augustine Institute who was there. Jared Stout, who's in my inaugural ecology reading group, and we are about to do the Benedict option, which Rod Dreyer was the keynote on the first night. And I got to kind of be friendly. I almost said friendly with Rod Dreyer, and we exchanged cards, and I think I'm going to get him on the show. He said he wanted to do it. So we'll see what happens. He's kind of a big deal, big book in the church right now. Jared Stout, Mark Gieschek, my partner on the Over the Counter podcast, which we haven't done in a while, was there. And I didn't see either of their talks because they were just reading papers. It was a paper delivery, kind of more of an academic conference for the most part. And I was like, you know what? I see these guys every day. If I want their paper, I'll ask for a copy of it and I'll read it. I want to catch a bunch of these people that I don't know and hear some things I've never heard. I've clocked in hundreds of hours talking to Mark Gieschek. If I want to know what he thinks about the new evangelization, I'll ask him. So I didn't go to either of their lectures, either of their talks. But and I miss Carol Logan. Carol Logan, who he's a former student, whose dad was my boss for a while there at the Augustine Institute, went on the Ave Maria working on a PhD. I guess she went to Benedictine, and she did a talk about the Sabbath and some stuff, and I missed it, but I really wanted to see her. I'm so proud of her. So massive shout-out to Carol Logan. It was super great to see Christy Logan and Steve Logan. They moved on from the Augustine Institute and went back to the Midwest, and I got to see them there. They came out to see their daughter present, and it was really great seeing them. I miss those folks. And mad shout out to Rebecca Arend. I never know how to say her last name. She did a great, great job. I was at her talk. She did a beautiful presentation on applying Kuhn's paradigm shift cycles. You know, how a paradigm shift happens in that scientific model by Kuhn about and applied it to the new evangelization. And I think that there's a ton more work to do there. And I gave her a bunch of ideas about how to look inside the process between that 5 steps that Sherry Waddell talks about in forming intentional disciples. She's crazy, crazy smart, really good girl. Did a beautiful job. Super big shout out to Becca. Good job. Other than that, other shout outs. Shout out to Aaron from AF Day Books down in Wichita. Kind of hoping to maybe do a Wichita trip tomorrow and go to AF Day Books. That's kind of been driving a lot. I don't know if that's going to happen. But AF Day Books in Wichita, I had a beautiful conversation with Aaron about Orthodoxy and Catholicism and Protestantism. And the guy is deeply ecumenical, and it seems like he's being supported as an ecumenical ministry in a way that I think it opened my eyes to some realities about Calix that I'm going to be thinking about on my big long drive back home. If Denver's home, there's a whole question. There's a whole episode with the concept of home. Where is home? Stability and staying in one place is a big conversation piece at this conference, actually. I will hit that, some of that. The main thing I just want to hit about this symposium is that it was very, very big picture. They were just going every talk from Rod Dreher's talk on the Benedict option, Patrick Deneen, David Schindler on the notion of freedom and democracy in America and the view of freedom that came from Locke and all that, how it underlies kind of the presuppositions of how our society is set up, all the way down to this, the change in technology and how that's affected our lives and everything that Bishop Conley talked about. Every talk, William Kavanaugh, all these great talks were at like 20,000-30,000 feet. They were, 40,000-50,000 feet is like why we're on the planet. But like 30,000 feet is like, how have we lived and what are our presuppositions? What has changed and what's changed really fast and what has changed so slowly that we didn't know we were being boiled alive in the pot of water? It's like just a big picture of where we're at in the West right now and how much we've lost and changed without noticing how much we've lost and changed. It was spectacular. Great symposium. And I think one of my highlights on the symposium was, so Bishop Conley of Lincoln, Nebraska, and I'm gonna finish with this, and then I had some notes on the actual Benedict option, which by all I can say is, I was mostly wrong about my presuppositions of what the Benedict option was and who Rod Dreher was and what he was proposing. And so anytime I've strawmanned him in the past, I recant. I got to have long conversations with Rod. I really like him a lot. He's very excited about what I'm doing with Calix. And we had a really strategic, beautiful conversation. And I'm going to hopefully see him on Wednesday night in Boulder and pick it up even farther. And I really like that guy. He's great. And so Zach Candler, the space plumber, has been a giant proponent of the Benedict option, and I've kind of strawmanned a little bit, and Rod was right. Rod was not what I was saying. So I know what you're thinking. Zach Candler is a space plumber, so he should probably know more than me. I'm not going to say you're right and I was wrong. And so my final thought for this episode that I'm going to pack my crap up and run before I get mugged in this park. So Bishop Conley was introduced by I can't remember the guy's name, but he was like the MC of this event. Was hilarious. He just had this great dry stand up kind of like humor. He should host a show, like an online or, talk show or something with a video. He was great. He's like Letterman or something, but funnier. Anyway, so he mentioned the Grateful Dead when he, a hippie following the Grateful Dead is how he started when he talks about Conley. And so someone asked Conley, what is your favorite Dead record? And he said, American Beauty, maybe Working Man's Dog. He immediately didn't flinch at all and had a serious 30-second exchange about what his favorite Dead record was. So afterwards, I asked a question and I said, American Beauty, A, American Beauty, B. I went in and asked him his question. And then afterwards we talked and I had a good solid 5-10 minute conversation with Bishop Conley about the Grateful Dead, Van Morrison, and the longing that's in pop music. So, and with that note, I'm over. Let's pull the plug, pop the cork on another episode of The Counterposition.
I take your place, marble stone. I take your place, marble stone.